All right. I've been sitting with this question for a while now. When did China stop being the world's factory floor and start being a genuine technology competitor? Because there's a specific moment people keep pointing to.
There really is. And it's not a policy document or a five-year plan. It's a board game. In 2017, Google DeepMind's AlphaGo defeated KGA, the world's top-ranked Go player, in a three-game match. For Chinese officials watching that, it landed differently than it did in the West.
Why differently, though? A Western tech company wins a game. Why does that hit Beijing harder than, say, Washington?
Go is deeply embedded in Chinese intellectual culture. Losing to a machine at that game felt like a civilizational signal, not just a tech demo. Senior officials reportedly described it as their Sputnik moment, the same phrase Americans used when the Soviets launched a satellite in 1957. The message was, we are behind, and we need to move now.
And they did move. The New Generation Artificial Intelligence Development Plan came out that same year.
Exactly. The plan set a clear trajectory. Match the world's leading AI nations by 2020. Make major breakthroughs by 2025. And by 2030, become the global AI innovation center. That's not incremental. That's a national mobilization framed around a single technology.
Now that kind of state ambition has a longer history, right? Made in China 2025 came before that.
Right. The State Council issued Made in China 2025 in 2015. The core idea was to move China higher in global manufacturing value chains, away from low-cost assembly and toward high-value production. It named 10 priority sectors: next-generation information technology, robotics, aerospace equipment, advanced medical devices, and others. Critically, it also aimed to reduce dependence on foreign firms for core technologies.
So not just make more stuff, make the stuff that matters strategically.
Precisely. And the plan set milestone targets for 2025, 2035, and 2049, that last date tied to the centenary of the People's Republic. The ambition was a leading position in global manufacturing and innovation by mid-century. That's a multi-generational commitment written into industrial policy.
Mm-hmm. But state plans are one thing. What actually fuels the day-to-day engine of Chinese tech? Because the startup culture there is intense is an understatement.
The phrase that captures it is gladiator culture. Chinese tech startups don't just compete, they fight for survival in a market where the pace of iteration is brutal. Think of a company like ByteDance launching and killing features in weeks, not quarters. The 9:96 work schedule, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week, became a symbol of that intensity and a genuine labor market debate.
Wait, that's a 72-hour work week as a baseline expectation?
As a documented norm in major tech hubs, yes, Shenzhen especially. It's controversial inside China too. Workers have pushed back legally and publicly. But the economic effect is real. Faster product cycles, more iterations, more data generated per unit of time. For everyone trying to understand why Chinese apps move so fast, that culture is part of the answer.
And data is the other piece. For example, WeChat. Can you explain why that single app is such a structural advantage for AI training?
WeChat is a useful case study here. In the West, someone might use a separate app for messaging, payments, ride-hailing, food delivery, and news. In China, hundreds of millions of people do all of that inside one ecosystem. That means behavioral data, what people buy, where they go, who they talk to, what they read, is linked and dense in a way that fragmented Western app ecosystems simply don't produce at the same scale.
So if you're training a large AI model, the data advantage is structural, not just a matter of having more users.
That's the key idea. It's about data linkage. A model trained on unified behavioral signals across payments, social and commerce, learns patterns that siloed datasets can't reveal. That's a genuine competitive edge. And it's partly why Chinese AI labs can move fast even when they face compute constraints.
Now, the honest tension here, and I think our listener would want this flagged, is that patent counts and R&D spending don't automatically equal productivity gains.
That's an important check. Research on Made in China 2025 found that the policy did increase innovation promotion subsidies flowing to targeted firms, but the same analysis found little statistical evidence that it raised those firms' productivity, R&D expenditure, patenting, or profitability in a meaningful way. Rapid growth in inputs, doesn't guarantee equivalent output quality. The gap between quantity and commercial performance is real.
So the takeaway for someone mapping this landscape is, the ambition is genuine, the state commitment is massive, the cultural engine is fierce, but the translation from policy to productivity is still uneven.
That's a fair read. And remember, this is the foundation. The shift from copycat to gladiator culture is real and documented. The data infrastructure is structurally different from the West, but the proof points are still being written. In our next lecture, we get into the actual AI models coming out of China and the GPU race, because that's where the Sputnik moment meets the hardware wall.